Howdy do, buckaroos. Welcome to the Mac Observer's Daily Observations podcast. Today is Friday. It is the 4th of December. This is 2020. I'm your host, Kelly Gamont. With me today, I have Andrew Orr. Hi, Andrew.
Hey, Kelly. Happy Friday.
And happy
we
Friday
powered
to
through
you.
The week.
Somehow. Still not quite sure how that happened, but here we are. So, regardless of how we got here, today is Friday. And as a result, as you may have noticed, since it's just Andrew and I today, it is Security Friday. And today we actually have not a name and shame news tidbit to start with, but like go you as a news tidbit to start with. And that's regarding Twitter.
Yeah, we're going to start out with some good Twitter news. So they announced this past
2020,
Wednesday.
Everybody. You had no idea this was coming.
Good Twitter news. So they announced on Wednesday that their mobile app now supports physical security keys for both iPhone and Android.
Nice.
Now, they did add support for these back in 2018, but you were only able to use them in the browser. But
okay.
Now, since Wednesday, you can use these keys on your mobile device. And by keys, so this is... We've talked about two-factor authentication before, and mm-hmm. what we usually mean by that, and I'm kind of guilty of this too, is having a one-time code sent to you.
Mm-hmm.
Like, I don't think there is much of a difference anymore. People, like Apple uses two-step verification.
Yeah, it's two-step, not two-factor, I think, in this case. Yeah.
Yeah, so that is two-step. What is actually two-factor is having an entirely separate device, like one of these security keys.
Yeah.
And I have reviewed one before from a company called Yubico. They make a...
The YubiKey!
Yeah,
they make literally know about one hardware authentication device, and it is the YubiKey. That's the only one I know.
So, well, they have a couple different ones, like for computers. They mm-hmm. have an NFC one, which you can use with your mobile device.
Yeah.
And they also have another one for the Lightning port, although
cool.
I have never been able to get that to work. So I just use the NFC one.
Okay. Well, not to completely derail, but yes, this is awesome that Twitter's doing it. And I just want to take a second and follow up on the two-factor discussion of this, which is that the code that you get sent as a text message or open your authentication app and look at the code in your authenticator, and it's only good for 30 seconds at a time and then it changes, those are time-based one-time passwords or TOTP. You can get a lot of things that will manage those for you if you're using something that implements like single sign-on and things like that at work. A lot of those use TOTP sorts of authentication, or some places that want you to use an authenticator, you can use 1Password. I don't know if Dashlane or if LastPass or any of the others have that functionality built in, but I know it's a thing that 1Password can do. So those are, if you see people talking about security and passwords and things and they're referring to TOTP as a login, it's you get this code and the code is only good for a very short period of time. So even those, like this link will expire in an hour or whatever and you have to log in, like those are the same sorts of things. So that's what those are about. So now we have a little bit, speaking of external authenticators, which is a little bit of hardware, we have other hardware news from Apple, and this starts with iPhones.
Yes, so this is a iPhone Wi-Fi exploit that Ars Technica calls breathtaking.
Oh.
Now, don't worry, it's already been patched earlier this year, but it was pretty serious. It was a memory corruption bug. I think it was some kind of a buffer overflow issue. It was in the iOS kernel, and it let attackers remotely access, like, it sounded like all the contents of your device over Wi-Fi, and it didn't require user interaction. And they also mentioned, and the exploits were wormable, meaning radio proximity exploits could spread from one nearby device to another, again, with no interaction. And so he says, the quote that I shared, the most advanced one installs an implant that they had that has full access to the user's personal data, which includes emails, photos, messages, and passwords and crypto keys stored in the keychain.
Mm-hmm.
So that is pretty scary because...
That sounds very scary.
And it sounded like the tools you needed to exploit this, I think it says all they need is a laptop, a Raspberry Pi, and some off-the-shelf Wi-Fi adapters, which is, I think, a couple hundred dollars overall, maybe even less. And
That is very scary, like you said.
Yeah. Oh, okay. Here we go. So it was patched way back in May with iOS 13.5, and they don't have any evidence that it was ever exploited. It was just something, you know, white hat hackers doing testing, and they alerted Apple.
Okay. But it has been patched.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. So that's the good part of this is that... This goes back to something else we say all the time on Fridays, which is you should probably run that system update, you know, especially if they're the ones that just say security update. You definitely want to run those. You may want to wait a minute on some of the others, you know, if they say that they're changing a bunch of functionality or things like that, like it's fine. Usually you want to wait a little bit and see if you hear about anything, because if something were to go wrong with the system update, as we've all seen, that information becomes available very quickly because when it goes wrong for someone, they're usually very vocal about it. So security updates tend to be pretty benign as far as like causing functionality on your computer to diminish or things like that. Like that stuff doesn't usually happen when it's just, you know, security update, something or other, you know, those are usually pretty safe to apply. And in this case, this is an object example of why that's a thing that you should do. So definitely do that. Yeah. Now let's move on to the Mac.
Yes. So this Mac bug, it doesn't sound like it has been patched. So this was discovered by Jeff Johnson. He reported this issue to Apple Product Security last December. And in April 27 of this year, he says, they finally tells me that they're still investigating the issue. But then here we go in November, and Big Sur is released to the public. He says it also affects Catalina and Mojave. And what it is, it has to do with a Unix command called ls, which you use to list the contents of a directory. And he says it enables unauthorized access to file metadata in directories that are supposed to be protected. And it kind of sounds like this could be used as a kind of remote attack, because he mentions attached to, you know, this article that he wrote up is a sample Xcode project that demonstrates how a Mac app can explore the contents of directories that it shouldn't have access to.
Yeah, that's not great.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So I guess there's not really much to say further, because like I said, it doesn't sound like it's patched yet.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and so we kind of have to wait on that one. But again, if you're on Mojave or Catalina, right?
Big Sur, Catalina, and Mojave.
All three. Okay. So if you're on one of those three and you get a security update in the next month or so, you should definitely run that.
Yeah.
Just a hunch. So now let's go ahead and move on to practical tips. Because it is the holiday season, we are giving you a bonus tip today. So that means we have two. So the first one is about encrypted DNS. We've talked a little bit about encryption in the past and why sometimes it's a good idea and why it would be good if your messaging was encrypted. But today we want to talk about if you were to use DNS servers that have encryption. And Andrew, tell us a little bit about what that is, first of all.
Yes. So I wrote up this, it's a roundup of five encrypted DNS services you can use. I wrote this up earlier this year. I recently updated it with a couple of new services, as well as the difference now between iOS 14 and iOS 13 and before. So again, just a quick summary. So DNS stands for domain name system.
Yes.
And people usually call it the phone book of the internet because it helps translate an IP address into human readable content. So the example that I gave in my article is the IP address for the MacObserver.com is 104.26.0.124. No one is going to be able to remember that, and that's why we're able to type in MacObserver.com thanks to DNS.
Mm-hmm.
So,
now, so where does encryption enter into encrypted DNS?
Yeah, so if you're using you should probably use an encrypted DNS, because if you go with the DNS, the default settings that your ISP gives you, they can look at all your web browsing and history and probably sell access to that to advertisers. So with encrypted DNS, I think, I might be wrong, but I think they can still see the top level domain of whatever website it is, but they can't look at what web pages you go to inside that domain. I think that's how it goes. And so you should definitely use encrypted DNS. So one of these services, in iOS 13 and before, you had to, if you downloaded a DNS app, it would set up a fake VPN profile in order for you to use it. But that kind of interfered with real VPN apps with real VPN profiles. Now with iOS 14, I'm so thankful for this, they introduced native DNS. And this works over both Wi-Fi and cellular. Because before it wouldn't work over cellular unless you use that VPN profile.
Okay.
And all you have to do is go into settings, VPN and network, DNS, and then type in the, in this area, you wouldn't type in the DNS servers. So you would need to download a DNS app still that will support iOS 14 and this new feature. And then in that area in settings, you will have a toggle that you can just flip on really quick.
Okay. That sounds good. And so we have a number of services available that allow you to do this easily.
Yeah. So there is Cloudflare. They first released their public DNS in 2018. Their claim is that they have this technology called Warp, and it makes it faster than other DNS services. And when they announced this in a couple years ago, they announced it on April 1st. And so their marketing campaign was centered around that, because the primary DNS server is just 1.1.1.1.
Oh, nice. That makes it easy. Yeah.
And there's I won't list all of these. I will link to this in the show notes, but I want to mention the one that I've been using for a while now, maybe a couple years, over a year at least. I really like it. It's called NextDNS. Mm-hmm. Now, the reason I like it is because it's way more configurable than the other DNS services, because with most of them, you just type in their DNS server or download their app, switch it on, and you're done. But with NextDNS, you have this entire configuration profile that you can set up, and you can in their web interface, you can turn on a whole bunch of different block lists at will, turn them on, turn them off, whatever. And it also has a bunch of different security settings, protecting against DNS hijacking and all that sort of thing. So that's my personal favorite.
Interesting. Okay. Well, this is interesting. This is another one of those things that we talk about, particularly because it's easy to implement. In this case, you know, even if you're, even if it's just changing the DNS settings on your router so that your traffic is redirected, so that your ISP doesn't get to keep all of those records, even at a minimum, that is is better than nothing. And even if you don't care about it being encrypted, there are ways that you can use other. There are open, commonly available DNS addresses that you can use instead that will do the same thing. So. Definitely look at DNS while you've got some time. And we have a second tip today, as I said, a bonus tip. And today's is about encrypted cloud storage.
Yeah, so these go hand in hand. First it was encrypted DNS, now it's encrypted cloud storage services. You can use these, you know, however way you want. If you want to make it your main service or use... like maybe you want to just store only certain sensitive data in it while still also using, you know, iCloud or Google Drive or Dropbox. Mm-hmm. So, you know, whatever you want. Again, I shared five of these. In the privacy security circles, probably the number one recommendation for people, if you like know, have a bit of tech knowledge to set it up, is Nextcloud. And the reason for that is the software, you can set it up, it's free and open source on your own server. And so that puts you, the control of your data in your own hands instead of, you know, hosting it on another company's servers. Mm-hmm. So that's the top recommendation. These other services are more like the traditional cloud storage hosting. So they're all encrypted. They all offer zero. Well, I think only some of them are zero knowledge, but they're all end-to-end encrypted. There is Crypti, which I reviewed a couple years ago. I like them. They are only in the web browser, though. They don't have any apps. Okay. But the company says this gives you a kind of a bit more deniability, I guess, because in a case where maybe your devices are seized by law enforcement, there won't be a they won't be able to see that you have a Crypti app on your phone.
Yeah, it won't be obvious.
It's just in the browser.
Yeah. Guess what? It's all secret in here. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Another one is called Tresret. They say they use Microsoft Azure's data centers in Ireland and in the Netherlands.
Okay.
They have a couple of different plans, both for individuals and businesses. And I think the maximum is a terabyte, maybe at least for users, individuals. I think the most affordable one out of all these is sync.com.
Okay.
Because like just their basic plan, which costs $8 a month, although that's billed annually, mm-hmm. that gives you a whole 2 terabytes.
Wow.
Yeah.
Okay. I mean, that to me seems like a lot of room. So.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And so finally, I added this as kind of a, this will be coming in the future. So we've talked about Proton Mail, which is an end-to-end encrypted email service that Charlotte and I use.
Mm-hmm.
They are slowly working on their own cloud storage called Proton Drive.
Okay.
Currently, it's only in closed beta for their paid users.
Okay.
So they don't really give a timeline of when they expect it to be public to everyone. Mm-hmm. I'm assuming we might see it next year sometime, so I'll definitely be keeping an eye out for that.
Yeah, that sounds interesting. Yeah, and if you want to find out more about any of these, we will have links to all of the information in the show notes, like as usual. And if you ever want to ask us more questions, if there's a topic you want us to dig into on Security Friday, we're happy to do that. Observations@macobserver.com, TMO Daily on Twitter, and you can leave comments in the show notes. Andrew, thanks so much for coming by.
Yeah, thanks for having me. A lot of good tips and news.
Yeah. Big full show today.
As always, I hope everyone has a good weekend.
As do I. I'm your host, Kelly Gamont. I will talk to all of you Monday. In the meantime, be excellent to each other and let's be careful out there.